Hey, Watermark family, this is John Weatherwax, and I'm here with my wife, Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, John. Good morning, everyone.
Well, it could be afternoon.
That's true. It could be evening.
It depends on when these people are listening. Hello, everyone. So, hello, everyone. Regardless of what time you may be listening, we wish you all well. So, Tracy and I are here to talk about our First Samuel podcast, specifically chapter 23, verses 15 through 29. Tracy, do you mind reading that for us?
One day near Horash, David received the news that Saul was on his way to Ziph to search for him and kill him. Jonathan went to find David and encouraged him to stay strong in his faith in God. Don't be afraid. Jonathan reassured him. My father will never find you. You're going to be the king of Israel, and I will be next to you, as my father Saul is well aware. So the two of them renewed their solemn pact before the Lord. Then Jonathan returned home while David stayed at Horash. But now the men of Ziph went to Saul in Gibeah and betrayed David to him. We know where David is hiding, they said. He's in the strongholds of Horash in the hill of Hakalah, which is in the southern part of Jessamon. Come down whenever you're ready, O king, and we will catch him and hand him over to you. The Lord bless you, Saul said. At last someone is concerned about me. Go and check again to be sure where he is staying and who has seen him there, for I know that he is very crafty. Discover his hiding places and come back to me when you are sure. Then I'll go with you. And if he is in the area at all, I'll track him down if I have to search every hiding place in Judah. So the men of Ziph returned home ahead of Saul. Meanwhile, David and his men had moved into the wilderness of Maon in the Arabah Valley south of Jessamon. When David heard that Saul and his men were searching for him, he went even further into the wilderness to the great rock, and he remained there in the wilderness of Maon, but Saul kept after him in the wilderness. Saul and David were now on opposite sides of a mountain. Just as Saul and his men began to close in on David and his men, an urgent message reached Saul that the Philistines were raiding Israel again. So Saul quit chasing David and returned to fight the Philistines. Ever since that time, the place where David was camped has been called the Rock of Escape. David then went to live in the strongholds of En-Gedi.
En-Gedi.
Wow, I had to work through a lot of words.
You did awesome. Very good, Tracy. Thank you for reading that for us. I just want to highlight before I kind of get into something I wanted to highlight before that. In verse 22, I love that he called David very crafty. I love that.
Yes.
So we want to talk about some different things that stood out to us individually. And for me, in the first few verses, just want to talk about the relationship between David and Jonathan, because I think that that's pretty special here in the first part of what we read. When Jonathan goes to find David, I just want to talk about that, because in verse 16, it says, Jonathan went to find David. And just thinking about the terrain and what kind of sacrifice that Jonathan made when he just went to find David. Because in the verse before that, David had received the news that Saul was on his way to search for him and kill him. So David already had that. But the whole reason that Jonathan was going to find David at that point was just to encourage him and lift him up. So I think that that's amazing. So I don't know what the distance here that Jonathan had to travel to find David and to give him that message, but just kind of, you know, throwing something out there, from Grand Haven to Holland is about 20 miles. So if you're walking or maybe on, you know, camelback or donkey or whatever, at 3 miles an hour, that's around 7 hours. So 7 hours there, 7 hours back, that you're giving up 2/3 of your day to do that. In a 24-hour period, you got some sleep in there, I imagine, too. So you're sacrificing a whole day and a lot of time, energy, and resources to be able to just get to David and say, hey, you got this, buddy.
And in that time, I think daylight in this part of the world is always only about 12 hours. So,
so
you have that contend with.
This is traversed at in the dark, too. Mm-hmm. So no flashlights, no like high LED lighting, right? So Jonathan sacrificed his time, sacrificed his safety in traversing this wild lands of the desert just to go there and encourage him to stay strong in his faith in God. As Jonathan in verse 17 reassured him and said, my father will never find you. And he said, you are going to be the king of Israel. So thinking about when Jonathan tells him that, we can go back to that, and we already know this by this point, but the sacrifice Jonathan made for David, he gave up his throne. Jonathan was the next one to be the heir to the throne, and so he gave that up. When he met David, he knew that David was going to be king. God put that on his heart. What a sacrifice. And then he says, when you're going to be king of Israel, he says, I will be next to you as my father Saul is well aware. And I think that's interesting, too, because not only is he sacrificing the throne, but he's sacrificing his relationship with his father. The relationship and the devotion and everything that they have to one another is beyond the relationship that Jonathan has with his own father. So I thought that was interesting.
That is really interesting.
So thinking about how this affects me, and I just think that friendship, that relationship that those two have is something that I don't know if I've ever experienced. Have you ever had a relationship that tight, that the level of sacrifice that they have done for each other, just that friendship, that bond?
I think that I have.
Well, that's amazing, because I've had a lot of strong friendships, you know, going back to, you know, middle school, high school, through my time in the military. And even now I have some really, really close personal friends. But to this level, I don't know. I'd have to really do a deep dive in the relationships that I have to consider if any of my relationships meet this criteria. So I think it's amazing that these two had that relationship. And I think ultimately, in a lot of ways, it probably saved David's life.
Absolutely. It reminds me of Frodo and Samwise.
Hey, absolutely. You know, I think
for those of you who like Lord of the Rings, yeah.
Yeah. I think the sacrifice that he went through, I mean, well, great job to throw a parallel in there, because now I'm thinking back to all the preparation we did for this. And I have a visual of the everywhere they traversed together. Anyways, that's amazing. All right, Tracy, what really stood out for you?
You and I were talking, and we were talking about the distances that were traveled and how, for me, one of the things that's missing from the Bible is you don't always know these distances, or you don't know how long it took people to go places, and you don't always know. There's not a lot of context to the space. So sure. Besides using words like mountains, hills, rocks, the great rock, you don't get a lot about what the space looks like. I think we all have our ideas of what Israel looks like.
You left your own imagination.
Yeah. So, and you know, I need a little more than that. So I love research, and I love natural history. So I spent some time trying to organize, because when you use internet searching, you really got to dig deep to figure out if the areas you're looking at are in the same place, because a lot of the historic names do not exist anymore. So there is a large desert in Israel called the Negev Desert. I think it's about 60% of Israel's, as it stands today, Israel's land.
Wow.
And currently, it's about 10% of the population. It's not really, there's nothing there. So as I did, I looked into the natural history of it and the type of rock. It's sort of similar to Utah. And this works out well for me because John and I just did a hiking trip to Utah in November.
Yes.
So there's a lot of sandstone. There's sedimentary rock. There's a lot of, it's what I like to call high desert, because it's about 3,000 feet above. So you have the base on the east side. You have the essentially a rift valley where the Dead Sea is. And then it goes up pretty dramatically into this high desert.
And that's where they were in this.
And that's where they were, and that's where they were traveling around. So I know now from my research that it looks a lot like Utah. It looks like a lot of the canyons. It is...
That is not easy space to traverse.
No, it's... And there's not a lot of vegetation. So it's not like when you're hiding behind trees in a forest. You're hiding in caves.
Like slot canyons.
Slot canyons. And this similar to Utah... They have flash floods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if it rains at all, which it doesn't really rain much, but if it does, then you risk death, like literal death. I'm not even exaggerating. Right. Not or being dramatic.
Right, because floods can happen in moments or minutes, right?
Right, and there's nowhere for the water to go except to fill up the canyon, which they're in. So he's hiding in these caves and in the desert, so it's really barren. There's, you know, imagine a few tumbleweeds. There's some things blowing around.
Something I'm very curious about, because before we went to Utah, one of the things that you know, I was kind of freaked out about is like the different types of wildlife, whether there is mountain lions, scorpions, snakes, and all that kind of stuff that we may encounter. And fortunate for me, we went late enough in the season where a lot of that stuff, it was colder, so we didn't encounter that.
Right, we saw one lizard.
Right. So nothing really that put us in danger, but what would be out there for them?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, John. Let me tell you. So there's a little bit of difference between wildlife then and now, but I can tell you that then there were lions in this area of the world. Really? There were also ostriches. Now, so I want you to, I just would like everyone to reframe this a little bit. Imagine David and his men running around and like there are the ostriches. Like that, I never considered ostriches in this area.
Can you ride an ostrich?
I think in theory you can. Oh, they can support you.
That'd be amazing.
They're really mean, though. I wouldn't suggest it.
Okay.
But, I mean, think about how big their eggs are. Anyway, so...
Food source.
All I know. Right. So I'm thinking about David and his men. They have to heavily rely on people. There were people around. David's still really popular. So it was suggested that there are a lot of people that may have helped them out with food and such. Because I don't think... they might not have even been able to find water without moving and having people help them in some ways. But there are also not only 40... count them, 40 types of scorpions, four of which are deadly. But who can tell the difference? I mean,
a scorpion's a scorpion. I mean, they all hurt you.
Yeah, there's this crazy long-eared bat that eats scorpions in this particular desert. So it's known to fly close to the ground and uses its echolocation to find scorpions, and it bites their heads off.
Oh my goodness.
And it gets stung, so it seems to be immune to the... to the toxicity of the scorpion.
The bats freak me out. They're the mice of the air.
I know. There are also 9 types of poisonous snakes in this particular desert. And they're mostly called vipers and cobras. So
I'm thinking about going back to our time in Utah where we saw signs everywhere of, you know, make sure to have communication in this area because there's, you know, you got a 3-mile point between or 3-mile hike between this point and this point. Make sure to have, you know, good closed-toed shoes, you know, hiking poles and have all this safety gear and equipment. And if you're saying that this climate that they're in, this region they're in is similar to what we experienced in Utah of modern age, they were out there wearing like open-toed sandals and tunics, right?
Exactly.
So they're experiencing everything that you just described and what, you know, all these different types of scorpions and snakes and all the peril just in the wildlife in the region and the terrain that they're in, but they don't have the safety devices. So thinking about the sacrifice and what they actually went through in a day to day and how they really had to lean on God to survive. I mean, what you're saying, moment to moment, not even day to day or week to week.
Well, and you're sleeping in a cave, and what else is in the cave besides bats and maybe a lion?
Right. And as we said earlier in the podcast, like they don't have good LED lighting to light those caves.
They do not. And one of the references, I don't know how many men were with them.
Sure.
I saw 400 at one point. So how big were the caves? I mean, they were pretty vast, or else they were in separate caves.
Right.
I also want to point out, I thought about this as you were talking, when you are hiking, I have learned over the years in hiking is once you go up to a ridge and you're like, oh, hallelujah, I made it to the top. You never stay at the top of a ridge. These types of terrain, you're up and then you have to go down like 400 feet only to come back up in the half mile. Like, so you're going up and down. It's not like you go up a hill and then you're just, well, yay, I made it to the top. No,
yeah,
you're
there's
going.
There's generally nothing there, right?
Right.
For you to depend on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. The rock that Saul and David at the end of this passage that they find themselves at, mm-hmm. I couldn't find the reference to it in the modern world. I don't know that they know exactly what hill they were on,
okay. But
they seem to have been on like opposite sides of this hill.
Right.
It wasn't, by all accounts, it wasn't a big hill, but they were
They referred to it as a mountain in there, but you're saying it's not what we would say is like Mount Everest or, you know, in the Rocky Mountains or anything
like
that.
No, and it seems to be, and the commentaries indicated that it doesn't really say how Saul found it. It says that Saul had an urgent message, but doesn't say where the urgent message came from. But they're saying that it seems to have come directly from God. It was like God intervening and getting Saul out of there to protect David because he was going to find David. It just wasn't a big enough mountain for David. This is where the text doesn't tell us. I think partly because I'm not supposed to get hung up in the details. And yet... I get hung up in the details.
Yes, you do.
So, because I like to picture it in my mind.
Right.
So now that we can all think about David and his men in the desert, like fighting lions and hitting bats with their spears. I don't know.
Right.
I mean who knows?
Yeah. Surviving.
Yeah. Surviving.
You know, not only to survive in the desert, we think about food and water kind of thing, but the other elements that you've now given us this image of the terrain and the wildlife and vegetation and all that stuff that is not a friendly environment.
It is not.
So they were certainly blessed by God to be able to survive that.
And
as we know now, to come out on the other side and be successful. But
God was certainly with them and protecting him.
I think that, you know, when we first read this passage, you know, 15 to 29, we're like, okay, what are we going to really highlight about that? And as we prayed about it and read over it, different things stood out to us. And I think that God kind of spoke to us individually on what was being highlighted for us. So thanks, Tracy. This has been fun.
Yeah, thank you, John. It has been fun.
All right. I'm just gonna pray real quick and wrap this up. I hope everybody has a good day. So Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this time and opportunity to just to hang out with my wife and to hang out with the Watermark family. I pray, Father, that you will use this podcast in general, all the different ones that we've already listened to and all the ones to come, and including ours today, to not only affect our hearts, but everybody that listens. I pray, Lord, you give everybody a safe day. I bless them as they go about whatever God may have for them today. Just make their paths straight and narrow. And yeah, we love you, Father. Thank you. All right, Watermark, have an amazing day. Talk to you later.